and also like very strange close-ups throughout the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah, and it's like it's true of all of these films as well. Like Magnolia and Boogie Nights both had, and There Will Be Blood as well. Having just watched it yesterday, some fantastic shots.
Mm, that's right. I think There Will Be Blood won an Oscar for cinematography as well.
Oh yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, it definitely got Best Actor, and I know it got another one for sure.
Best Adapted Screen. Or no,
it's, that wouldn't have won Best Adapted Screenplay.
What was it? Was it?
And also, there's like some contention about whether or not that's like actually an adapted screenplay.
Well, I mean, it like came it from is a and book, it isn't. But
Brian, shout out to Brian, would disagree. He would say that it's not an adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that then?
Because I guess the book Oil, which supposedly There Will Be Blood is based off of, it was only used as sort of like an inspiration. There's not really any direct
reference. It very much sort of gives us the setting, but the plot is very much an original creation of PTAs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're coming to a close here on CITL 101.9 FM. But yeah, it's been fun. Nice little roundup of Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah. So just before we go, I'd just like to give a quick shout out to the Rio Theater. Oh. Saw the Rocky Horror Picture Show there last night. My probably umpteenth time seeing it there. They had a special April Fool's Day cut of the film, which was very nice. They had the Vancouver Shadow cast out. Always a good time. So what's up, Rio?
We'll hear back from them next week. Yeah. All right.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, thanks very much for listening. Coming up now, we have Melanie with Brand New Key, which is from Boogie Nights. Next up, we have
Community Living coming up.
Community Living from 9 to 10, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that on CITL 101.9 FM.
Alrighty then.
Whoever put the auto DJ on, they should be ashamed of themselves. Welcome to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks, the full hour edition.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from a nice warm bed, just remember what your old pal said, boy, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
And welcome to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks across British Columbia and maybe across Canada if we ever get the support. I'm Kelly. Along with me is Michael.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, or wherever you are, you're listening to the podcast.
And welcome to our show, depending on where you are.
Yes. So, on today's show, we got something. You have something. You always have something.
I always have something, don't I?
That's good.
Well, actually, I have to say this. I'm going to give a quick shout out to our friend Carrie, mm-hmm. Who is not here with us today, but and her friend Carl Meadows is like for having such a great event at the Junction Saturday night for Strut. It was a really great time and for a really good cause. So. Any cause that helps equality in the world is a good cause, right?
Mm-hmm. So, that's good.
Yeah. So we'll probably have clips from that on another day. I unfortunately didn't get through enough editing to get audio clips from Carl's talk. I would like to actually put that up. So,
all right.
When we have time. But today we do have an interview I did with Wendy McClellan.
Mm-hmm.
She's talking about her book, and it's 27 Steps to Freedom.
27 Steps to Freedom, yes.
And it starts with a bit of story about how she formulated the 27 steps, and a lot of it had to do with her having a very successful business that was about to go international,
mm-hmm.
and her getting tremendously sick and having to relearn how to walk, talk, and eat all over again. So,
okay.
because of her illness. So, yeah. So,
whenever you're ready.
And if we are ready, let's.
Let's do this. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Anne, for listening to the Community Living Show. And we're here today with Wendy McClellan. And she is the author of 27 Steps to Freedom. So we're going to talk about to Wendy about a bit about her story and how she came to write the book. So,
some bit of a technical glitch there. We're having some bit of volume controls. Let's see if we have it on here. In the meantime, who was the person that you were talking to?
Wendy McClellan.
Oh, sorry. Wendy who?
Wendy McClellan.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully I actually said her name right this time. Yeah, she is. She's trying to push the book out right now. She is a business consultant. Her specialty is actually LinkedIn.
Yeah,
And she does a wonderful job of helping people get their LinkedIn profiles noticed in all the right venues so they can build their businesses, which is really cool. She's a very caring person,
mm-hmm.
And that she she really takes time to get to know you before she even starts working with you. And I've actually known Wendy for a couple years by way of networking around mm-hmm. Vancouver.
All right, so we're going to try this again and see what happens.
Thank you, Anne, for listening to the Community Living Show. And we're here today with Wendy McKellen. And she is the author of 27 Steps to Freedom. So we're going to talk about to Wendy about a bit about her story and how she came to write the book. So, hi, Wendy. How's everything going?
Awesome. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I've known you for a little bit of time now, haven't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kept running into each other at different events happening around Vancouver.
Yeah. So, what are you trying to accomplish with the book?
Well, the book is a story of overcoming some serious obstacles in my life, and I learned a lot of really interesting lessons during that time that I now apply to my life every day, and I think that the lessons can be helpful to anybody, no matter what the obstacle is they're facing, whether it's loss of a job or an illness or a divorce. There's a lot of life lessons that aren't new. What I've written is not new. It's just that my voice may be different from someone else's that people have heard. And I think we continue to need those inspirational voices in our life to keep us moving forward and to help us recognize that we're not the only one that's gone through struggles in our lives. And there are leaders and guides that can help us, you know, maneuver through those struggles a little bit easier. And so my book, I want it to be a guidebook for people as well as an inspiration to them.
Cool. So I guess we'll start by kind of picking apart from the very beginning. Chapter one is Before the Storm. So there's a bit of story there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was married with three children and under the age of 10. And, you know, I was happy. We were, my ex-husband traveled quite a bit for business and we moved a few times for his work. And so, you know, I was always in a state of having to make new friends and find new community. And I was, you know, I was good with that. I enjoy meeting people and getting out there and getting to know people. So, you know, it was an interesting time, but I, you know, I was happy, and we moved out to Abbotsford, where I still live, and my marriage, you know, just ended, as many do, and so I had these three small children under the age of 10, and I had, at the time, I was actually an apprentice midwife, so I was on call for moms who were having babies, and I just couldn't continue with that, with three kids at home, and trying to help them rebuild their lives and maneuver through the divorce and that kind of thing. So I thought about my skill set, and I looked at getting jobs, but none of them would pay me enough that I could reasonably support my family. And so I thought, well, what do I know how to do? And I knew how to type really well. Thank goodness I'd taken typing in high school. And so I was able to get a computer from one of the big box stores, and I had 6 months to pay it off. And during that time, I typed term papers for university students, menus for restaurants, brochures, flyers. And what started to happen was businesses would, you know, say to me, oh, this is a slow time for us. We don't know how to get over this hurdle. And for me, marketing just came naturally. And I would give them suggestions and they would work. So that was sort of the start of my referral business. People would refer their other business owners to me, and I quickly grew the business. And my local chamber phoned one day and said, would you come in and do some consulting, which I did. And then the next day I got a call from University College of the Fraser Valley. At the time it was not a full-fledged university. And from that, I was asked to come in and speak for a day in their entrepreneur program. It was a six-month program for people that wanted to start their own businesses. Mm-hmm. And so I said, sure, I'll come in. And, you know, I didn't have a university degree, but they said that was fine. So I went in and worked with the students for a day and just kind of helped them get over, you know, whatever roadblock they were having, whether it was in their business plan or a marketing strategy. And at the end of it, I was asked to create a whole curriculum for the university college. And one thing I always say to my clients is whenever you have a win like that, you ask yourself the question, how do I take this to the next level? So for me, taking it to the next level meant radio. And I didn't have a meeting with, I didn't have an appointment with the marketing manager, didn't know the marketing manager's name, and did not have a proposal, because at that time, I didn't even know what a business proposal was. But I drove out to my local talk radio station and was able to meet with their marketing manager. And within a day, he got back to me and said, do you have your own radio show? And this was a Friday. And he said, be ready on Monday morning with 14 scripts so that we can start recording. And I was like, oh, okay. So he
That's
said
a
also...
pretty big jump there.
Yeah. So one of the things was I had to have internet access, an email address at least. And the radio station was really big on the internet at that time. And this is like 1996. So I'd heard of the internet, but I didn't know what it was really. So anyways, I logged on that weekend and my kids were actually with their dad that weekend. And so I didn't go to bed the whole weekend. I just was online and I was just so impressed by what I saw. And if you think back to that time, there was only about 200,000 web pages. That's it. I mean, that's just crazy. And so I saw big companies like Ford Motor Company, Kraft Foods, that kind of thing. And I thought, you know what? I can do this. So I got this massive sheet of paper, drew out what I wanted, worked with a graphic designer, taught myself some code, worked with a coder, and we built a website. And within 3 weeks, the New York Times chose it as one of the best business sites on the net.
Wow.
So that was pretty awesome. And so again, the question, how do I leverage this and take it to the next level? And I sent out a nationwide press release, and that got me massive coverage and just blew up my business, so that I had, at some points, I had up to 12 web designers working with me building sites for clients. And I was traveling all over North America talking about using this new thing called the internet for business. And I was, you know, business was crazy busy and loving it. My kids were doing well. And I was actually in 1998 nominated for Canadian Entrepreneur of the Year. And so that was a real honor. And then in 1999, things were going very well. I was actually about to open an office down in LA because I was traveling in the States so much. And I don't have, without a university degree, it's really hard to get a green card. But if you invest a certain amount of money in an already established U.S. business and hire U.S. employees, you can work in the States. So I got a second mortgage on my house and started to, you know, do the paperwork to make this happen. And then I got really sick, and that just kind of changed everything.
Okay, when you say sick, what do you mean by sick?
Well, my kids got a stomach bug. And over the summer of 99, and I got it too, but mine didn't go away, and I just kept getting sicker and sicker with like fevers of 103 and bleeding sores in my throat, and couldn't keep food down, and I was losing like 2 or 3 pounds a day, and I kept going to the doctor and he couldn't figure out what was wrong. And midway through this, about 3 weeks into that process, I couldn't even look after my children anymore. So I asked my ex-husband and his new wife to take them. And within another week, I had shut the whole business down because I just couldn't function. I was having hallucinations and fevers. And finally, one night, I phoned a friend and I said, you've got to get me to the hospital. And she took me in, and they couldn't get a blood pressure reading because I had been hemorrhaging for 6 weeks. And it turned out that it was an E. coli infection that had gone into my spine, and it had eaten away portions of the lower three vertebrae, two discs, one kidney, and gave me brain damage. So I was given blood transfusions here in Abbotsford and stabilized, and then moved into Vancouver General for 63 days. And treated there with massive doses of antibiotics and other things. And then when I left hospital, I was in a body cast. So just below my shoulder, my armpits, down to my knees, I was encased in plaster to fuse the bone fragments back around the spinal cord. So I was pretty much flat on my back for 6 months. And wow. I came home and actually didn't come back to my house. I was lucky enough, my parents lived in Langley and took me in and took wonderful care of me, got a hospital bed, and, you know, made sure I took my medications at the right time. And so I kind of had, I got to be parented all over again and taken care of, which was lovely and exactly what I needed.
Oh, that's amazing that... did you would recover?
It is, yes, because there was a point where they didn't know if I would survive, and then also a point where they didn't know if I would walk again. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I am very lucky to be alive. And when I went to live with my mom and dad, you know, I was told, start moving slowly, because they didn't want too much movement or the bones wouldn't fuse, but they didn't want me to become even more incapacitated by not moving. So each day I would move around their house a little bit, and then I wanted to start walking more to get outside. So they had a really nice flat driveway, and my goal was to get to the end of that driveway in one go. And it took me about 3 weeks to go from their front door to the end of the driveway all at once, slowly, very slowly, with my cane, but I did it. And then for some reason, coming back to their front door, I counted the steps, and it was 27 steps. And so after my recovery and rebuilding my life, I ended up losing my home and going bankrupt because I had no income for 2 years. And, you know, rebuilding, and the last, 14 years have kind of been spent finishing raising my children. They're all grown now and off on their own, and rebuilding my life. And so last year I finally felt emotionally strong enough to write the story, because going back in time and reliving a lot of those events, very painful. And I lost a lot. I lost nearly a year with my children, lost my home, lost my business. And so I wasn't ready until last year to write a book. But when I was ready, I wanted to share the story, but also share what the things were that I used, the tools I used to rebuild my life. And so that's what the 27 steps are about. There's 27 lessons in there where I talk about things like having a plan and collaboration and different things that really can help anybody overcoming any kind of an obstacle in their life.
Well, after hearing you put the story the way you did, the name of the books makes perfect sense, and so does some of the things that some of the chapters. It sounds like I guess I'll just start off with this first chapter. Lesson one was accepting your weaknesses. It sounds like you had to go through a lot of acceptance to even start to recover.
Yes. I had, prior to getting sick, been your typical type A personality. Nothing stopped me. Nothing got in my way. And when you are flat on your back in plaster for 6 months, not a heck of a lot you can do. And I had to accept that I wasn't going to get back my physical strength to the level where it was, that I had to relearn so much because of the brain damage. I was going back to reading grade one readers and doing crossword puzzles and having to learn to speak again because it was hard for me even to put a sentence together. I couldn't find the words. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was really hard because I could remember, I lost a lot of memory during that time. Things that happened in the hospital later, I got all the notes and I read through them, and more than half the stuff I don't even remember. And I was hallucinating and saying things that the nurse had written in the notes. I don't remember any of it. But what I could remember was that just prior to getting sick, I'd stood up in front of 1,200 people for 90 minutes and spoken with just 6 bullet point notes on a little card. I couldn't even put 3 words together afterwards. So I really had to accept that there were things that I couldn't do anymore, but I also wanted to find a way to regain as much of those skills as possible. And you and I talked about this before we started recording, that the psychological recovery was and continues to be even harder than the physical, because you have to really accept who you are today as someone very different than who you were before, and letting go of that person can be really difficult.
Yeah, that's very true. So we're going to take a bit of a station break here. Thank you for listening to the NCRA Network.
Yes. You want to take a station break? You want to take a station break now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, we'll come right back with more on the Community Living Show. before we do that, I just gotta add a little voice to in here. So I'm hoping that we get our... No, I don't... Here we go.
Poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio. Let's see here, God. Ugh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
When I climbed up the mountain, climbed back down again for you. I climbed up the mountain again for you, and then I climbed back down. Climbed up.
Ugh. Isn't there
anything?
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 Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
We're back on the Community Living Show, and we are talking. We have been talking to Wendy McClellan.
McClellan.
Yes. And who is she?
She is a author, and she is also a business consultant.
All right, let's go back to the interview.
I'm here with Wendy McClellan, and you are listening to the Community Living Show. So, one of the other, the next chapter, it kind of stood out for me, Forgive Yourself. That seems like a really important lesson to people. And I know in my own life it becomes a very important lesson that... I know I made a mistake, and now I have to forgive myself for making that mistake in order to move forward. So go into lesson number two, please.
Sure. You know, we've all put ourselves in situations in our lives where we look back and we go, what the heck was I thinking? And why did I do that? And, you know, we beat ourselves up continually. But the more that we do that, the longer we hold ourselves back from rebuilding. And so for me, I had to forgive myself for pushing my body so hard that it just couldn't cope with this infection anymore, and I got really sick. And from what my doctors told me, I probably had this E. coli bacteria in my system for 6 months. But because I wasn't listening to the little signals my body was giving me, and I was continuing to push so hard, I made the situation worse. So I had to forgive myself, and then from that point, I went, okay, so I didn't listen to my body's promptings before. The lesson is, listen to them now. And one thing about forgiving yourself is if you don't, you will never be able to move forward because you'll continually be beating yourself up. And for me, one of the big forgivenesses was having to forgiving myself for being away from my kids for nearly a year. I can never make up that year, and I could mourn it, which at times I have and do, but if I stay stuck in that place of feeling so bad about it, I'm not going to enjoy the time I have with my children and grandchildren now. So I have to let it go. And at various times, each one of my kids has had that conversation with me, and we've talked about it, and you know, they tell me what that year was like for them, because that's important for me to know, and important for them to be able to tell, to share. So you have to forgive yourself and let yourself move forward and really love yourself enough to say, you know what, it's okay. At the time, you thought you were doing the right thing, and then you have to move on, or else you're never going to achieve the other great things that life has in store for you.
Wow, that is all very true. And it's something I know for myself, I have to keep that in mind and constantly keep that in mind. you know, trying to move forward and accomplish and be successful. You know, the next lesson that really seemed really important was lean on others. So let's explain that a little bit.
Sure. When you're going through any life situation that's difficult, you can't do it alone. And so for me, it meant accepting help from people and just relaxing into that help. So when I went and lived with my mom and dad, they were amazing. And then when I came home, I had friends that stepped up and really helped me, friends that would cook meals for me or run errands because I couldn't drive and I was still using a cane. And then I had a dog at the time, and we lived in this house I was in had a yard that wasn't fully fenced, so I couldn't just let her out to run. And a friend of mine, her husband, built a dog run for me so that my dog could go out and I didn't have to worry about her. So there's a lot of people that really stepped up to help me during that time.
Wow. That must have been kind of rough, being so independent before and then learning to lean on other people.
It was tough, but I turned it around to think of it in a different way, because I know for me, when someone needs help, it just makes my heart swell when I can help them. It's a gift that I can give to them. So for me, I had to learn to look at it that way, that these people loved me enough to offer me this gift of their help and their time and their resources. And when I shifted it to thinking of it as a gift, it made it much, much easier. And it just made it more, it made it a beautiful thing. Like, I didn't feel bad about accepting help anymore. And I think that's how we're meant to be. You know, we help people when we can, but when we need it, we accept it graciously and with love.
The next one that is number 26. And you just kind of led right into that with being gracious and acceptance. That, to me, equals gratitude. So why don't we talk about lesson number 26?
Absolutely. Gratitude is one of my daily practices. And every night before I go to sleep, I name 5 things that I'm grateful for that day. And sometimes when you're going through a rough time, it can be really hard, but there were days when I would just be grateful that I had a roof over my head and food in the fridge. And then now what I've done to kind of amplify that practice is I have created a gratitude jar. And usually 3 or 4 days a week, I will remember. I don't always remember, even though it's sitting on my kitchen counter. I don't always remember, but I try to remember to put something in there. So as an example, one of my grandsons is 6 and a half, and we go for a movie date once a month. So I always put the movie stubs in there. So we went in January, I think we went to see Big Hero 6. So that movie stub's in there. It was my birthday earlier this month, and my family took me out for ice cream, and I kept the receipt and put some really cute little notations on it. And that's in the jar, so that on New Year's Eve this year, I will open the jar and take everything out and kind of reread it and review all the wonderful things that happened in my world this year. So gratitude to me is really important, and it doesn't matter how much you have or how little you have. It's not, to me, it's not about stuff. It's about experiences, and it can be for me anything from, I had a client the other day, we were on a 1-hour coaching call, and about 2 minutes in, he asked me a question about something he was struggling with, and I you know, offered him a solution, an idea, and he said, "That is perfect. I don't even need the rest of this phone call. Just bill me for the hour. That's all I needed to hear today." Well, I was very grateful for that. You know, I thought, I felt really good that I've been able to help him in such a short period of time. So that went in the gratitude jar.
That would definitely be one to go in the gratitude jar.
Yeah.
That is something that we both share, the coaching, and I don't think I've ever helped anyone that fast.
Well, I hadn't either, trust me. It was a first-time experience for me, too. It was quite, you know, it was really cool.
Wow. So, is there another chapter that that maybe I didn't mention stood out, that, but you really want people to know?
I think the most important one to me is the final one, which is share your knowledge. Okay. Share what you've learned. Your life story and experiences have immense value to others. And this could be something as simple as teaching a child how to tie their shoes, or teaching a dog that's in a shelter how to behave properly so he can get adopted, or helping a senior get their garden ready for winter because you love gardening yourself. Share what you know, whether it's to do with your business or whether it's to do with life in general, your community. Everyone is a wealth of information. And once people start realizing that and valuing themselves more, they become happier, their stress levels go down, and everyone benefits. So no matter where you are in your life, there's something you know that will benefit other people, and start to share it.
That just sounds profound.
Well, I don't know if I'm a profound person, but I like to consider myself fairly smart. Profound, haven't added that yet.
Wow. Let me be the first to add that one for you.
Okay, thank you. I'll take it.
A one for the gratitude jar, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's just the way you put about sharing things is like, and it's not like you're asking people to share anything like huge, like the meaning of life or anything like that. It's just the simple things like you tying your shoes is like, and if you think about it, how important that is to of a skill.
Yes. Well, I was babysitting my grandsons about 2 weeks ago, and my oldest one, who's 6 and a half, my movie buddy, he said, "Nana, I got these new shoes, and I really want to learn how to tie them." So we practiced, and he tied his shoes, and we took a picture and texted it off to his mom and to his aunties, and he was just so proud. So, and that made his day. It made my day, too.
Yeah. So you have how many grandchildren?
I have 3 grandsons, and I have another grandson on the way in July.
Wow, congratulations on the new one.
Thank you.
Yeah, and how
yeah
many
they're,
kids
they're my the light of my life, those little guys, for sure.
Yeah, and how many kids do you have?
I have 3 children. My son is 30, and my girls are 27 and 25.
Wow. Excellent. Yeah, it's having kids is so much fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you talked a little bit about you wanted to start a movement. Something that we talked about in another conversation, but we never really got into depth about that. So, what would that look like?
I think it would look like the last chapter of the book, which is share what you know. I want to encourage people to take something that they know and share it with one other person. So my goal this year is to speak to over 50,000 people at live events and have each one of those people go out and share what they know with somebody else. And like I say, we are all so much richer than we know with our experiences and the lessons we've learned and the knowledge we've picked up along our life that by keeping it all, it's like hoarding. It's like, no, it's mine and no one else can touch it. When in reality, most people want to be more engaged and want to be more involved in their community, and they don't realize how simple it can actually be just by sharing what you know.
It really can be that simple. But sometimes isn't it hard to do, to just to share what you know?
Of course. And for me, I think that comes back to one of the things, one of the chapters in the book is about being brave and going out of your comfort zone. You know, I want to end my life feeling like I didn't waste an opportunity. And we hear that all the time. You know, these self-help gurus talk about it all the time. But it's another thing to live it. And to live it means to have a little bit of fear in your life every day. It means to do something that you're scared to do, whether it's picking up the phone and asking about an opportunity. It could be about changing the way that you relate to someone in your life. It could be about joining a gym. It could be anything in your life that scares you. but is going to benefit you. And so getting out there and find, like, if you love animals and you don't work well with people, go volunteer at your local SPCA, you know, go volunteer at the animal shelter, or, you know, raise money for an animal charity or something. If you like working with seniors, every senior center in the world loves volunteers, because so many seniors sit there day after day with no one to visit them. If you have a dog that is friendly, you can get it certified as a therapy dog and take it into schools. You can take it into senior centers. So I'm not talking about people doing radical big things. What, you know, there is this thing we know as the ripple effect. One person touches one person's life, touches two more, and things can spread very quickly when there is positive intention behind them.
That is very true, and I guess it's one of the things that that our society tends to trail away from is the positive intentions, and they want to focus more on the negative intentions of things. And that's one of the reasons why I do what I do, is to help people stay focused on the more positive things. And that's why I like hunting down people like you, Wendy, to keep people looking at the positive stuff.
Yeah, we are so inundated with negativity on the news and social media, and I'm really trying to cut that part out of my life. I still know what's going on in the world, and I do check the, you know, I do look at the news online, you know, 5 minutes a day. That's it, just to kind of be aware of what's happening. But I don't focus on it. I know that I can make more difference in this world by focusing on the positive stuff and moving forward and helping other people than I can by inundating my brain with all of this negative energy that's out there. And it's the same in our relationships. Like, I have no hesitation in unfriending or defriending someone on Facebook who's toxic, or not associating with someone whose moral compass isn't the same as mine, going in the same direction. You know, I am choosing to surround myself with positive people and influences, and that is a personal choice that everybody can make, and that can change the world.
Wendy, I believe you really will change the world.
Well, thank you. So that's the goal.
To help your goal along, tell everybody, all of our listeners out there, how they can find your book.
Okay. It is on Amazon. Just type in 27 Steps to Freedom. There's also a website of the same name, so 27stepstofreedom.com. And you can find out there also what I do for my business, which is consulting, business strategy, keynotes, corporate training, and inspirational talks. So you can reach me at 27stepstofreedom.com or wendymcclellan.com. And that's Wendy with a Y, MCCLELLAND.com.
And this is a joke, Wendy. I hope someday to be able to pronounce your last name correctly.
Well, you will if you keep practicing, my friend. Sorry, you're not the only one.
But thank you for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, honor's all mine. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show, Michael.
Oh, it's been wonderful. So we will see everybody next week. Thank you.
Well, next week is today, right?
Yeah.
So that was Wendy McClellan. What a good interview. It was good.
Yeah. She's a really pleasant person.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're going to take a station break and probably add in one song and then summarize, and then that'll be it for today's show. All right?
Okay.
Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. We play all types of D&D or jungle for the first half of the show. On the second half of the show, it gives you that irritating noise that you just don't want to hear it. Or it could be some ambient sounds that might drift off and or fall asleep in the moment of life. Or it could be some new age that you just heard on most stations, but even better. Or it could be that this music has no beat or drums in that music. Either way, tune into the Late Night Show, now broadcasting on Saturday mornings at 12:30 a.m. right after the Medicine Show, also hosted by me, DJ Ray, and Jason Lawrence.
If you happen to hear us around the world, you can always check us out at CITR.ca. And we're back. I can't believe that song was so fast. That song was called $100. Well, actually, it's by $100. And the song is called Snow and Rain. You're listening to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm with Kelly and Michael.
Talk about
what we're going to be planning on doing.
Well, the first thing I was gonna do is remind everybody that today is Autism Awareness Day.
Yes.
And this is also April is also Autism Awareness Month. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I'm wearing a bit of blue.
Yeah, I'm wearing blue jeans. So.
Well, there you go. That's dark blue.
Yes. So.
There you go.
I have my puzzle piece on my bag.
Oh, okay. So yeah. That's good. That's good to know.
So it turns out that's the international symbol for autism, at least according to our friends at Autism Speaks.
Yes.
So I guess some of the other things, is there anything special happening this particular weekend?
Well, the referendum is still going on with the public transit situation, and so far I've read about 4% have turned into their mails, the mail,
yeah,
you know, ballots that are in there. So that's all I know that's happening with the transit referendum, TransLink referendum there.
Yeah.
And
have they ever explained what the overall plan is to use the money, how they plan on improving the system?
Well, what I've heard it from ads on the buses, they're saying that if you vote yes, they would have about 80% of more night buses, which is fine by me.
Yeah.
After I do my late night show.
Yeah.
The other parts are like 11 new B-lines. That's what I heard. Possibly replacing the number 43 route peak hour rush hour bus as part of a B-line route Monday through Sunday. I know there's going to be some sort of a light rail going to Langley and Surrey. That's what I heard. So, Those are the yes sides. Those are the yes sides. The other side of it is you have to pay another 0.5% of it. So, of the PST. So, it's only in the Lower Mainland, not anywhere else in British Columbia, which is a darn nuisance, which I think if you're trying to announce a 0.5% of the PSD, it should be throughout British Columbia instead of the Lower Mainland. It's ridiculous.
I guess along with that is like, because people that don't live in the Lower Mainland, they get angry about, well, why do I have to pay more money for Vancouver to have a SkyTrain? Is one of the things I've heard, actually I heard people say.
Yeah, and, well, you don't have a SkyTrain in Victoria. You don't have a SkyTrain in Prince George. You don't have a SkyTrain in any parts of British Columbia, for that matter. So,
with that being said, that if we're going to increase, give these folks more money, then they should be looking to improve transit across the province, and all the areas, you know, not just Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. But I guess that's one of the things that they haven't actually put out there, how they will improve some of the other areas. So
another part we want to try and get involved is the MLA for Vancouver East. Jenny Kwan.
Yes.
I said Vancouver East. I meant Vancouver Mount Pleasant. Jenny Kwan to come in to discuss about her plans on what she wants to do to replace Libby Davies.
Right.
And what she wants to do with the orange when she goes over to Ottawa. Right. After, hopefully, when... if she gets elected after October. So I know the situation with C-51 is an issue, a big issue to across people about the freedom, well, I would say freedom of speech, freedom of the press probably, and possibly the Terrorist Act law for that matter. And I want to ask you, what's on your take on that C-51?
My take on anything is like any bill or law is going to be good provided it limits bureaucracy and allows more freedom of thought from the people in general. And in general, they're not writing laws that way. They're writing laws that provide that we increase in government and more government agencies and things like that, more regulations, more bureaucracy, and that's not always a good idea.
Yeah.
So you know,
it is sad to see some of the part of the freedom of speech and freedom of, you know, the rights and everything. So, I mean, it's...
the less bureaucracy that's in it, the more freedom there's going to be. So.
Any other final notes? Any other news? Before we say goodbye.
Out of everything, nothing really, really big. This particular weekend, we had the really big things last weekend with Strutt, and then the actual walk is going to be in June. I want to have Carl Meadows actually come on the show and talk to us more about that, and maybe bring somebody with him that's actually experienced, that actually has come as a refugee into Canada because of gender issues. I'd like to have him come on and do something like that, because he's so passionate about it, and he speaks way better about those sort of things than you or I actually could. So,
okay,
yeah, because he's been involved with the Foundation of Hope from the very beginning of it, and it's been around for a large number of years. You know, mm-hmm. it actually has history to it. So, yeah. So, man, I'm working hard with Kerry and to pressure him into finding time to actually come in here and speak with us.
Okay.
So,
I know we're going to be doing some meetings for next week, and one of the issues is possibly expanding our show. I know we have a half hour show on our other station, Co-op Radio, and I know this station, CITR, has the hour show. We're hoping to expand it to Victoria sometime soon. I'm hoping one of our listeners who did used to listen to our show, his name is Peter Bourne, he's totally blind, he's a musician, he used to be residential of the Woodlands residential area, and I'm hoping that he doesn't have a computer for one, mm-hmm. Especially for a blind person who doesn't know much about computers, and especially is his own age, for that matter, he doesn't have the thing that he does. So, I'm hoping the other station, CFUV, will can help us out as well, and have their station in Victoria do our similar broadcast of people with disabilities, challenges, and mental needs, right, and everything for that. And then that could be my that's possibly of getting my next goal onto this show. So I'm hoping to talk to the people over there and see what they have to do on the radio behalf. So I'm hoping to have maybe Peter Bourne on sometime soon. Once that happens, and it's a possibility I might go over to Victoria and do a help out with the facilities in there. So that's a possibility. So lots of things to work on over the next few months. And of course, summer will be just around the corner soon, so we'll be talking about some hot topics. So, all right. So this has been the Community Living Show. So we're going to say goodbye. Hi. Thanks to our Wendy McClellan for the interview. And so tune in next week.
And thank you for everybody for listening.
Yes. See you. See you, everybody.
That's right.